Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening. This is We Talk Productions, one of the few black radio networks that explores solutions to issues. To issues in the black community, presents Black Urban America. All you folks that listen by laptops, you can dial 516-531-9540 and press 1 if you have a comment or a statement. The lineup as usual, Tuesdays, we have Black Urban America, and my name is Kenny Jones, and I'm your host. On Wednesdays, we have Cutting Edge with Michonne Williams. On Thursday, we have Paula Harlem Magazine by Wayne A. Young. On Saturday, we have Provocative Thought by Caucus Sneed. All shows begin at 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Tonight, he is part of a father and son team that have their own platform on YouTube. And they address almost all issues from a conscious thought. They're very informative, very knowledgeable, and his posture's a little funny too. Yeah, I mean, Black Dot's really funny. But we have the son tonight. But before I bring him on, I just want to ask, how is today black activism? Are black activists successful, or is it the same old thing that we've been experiencing for decades? Brother Malcolm X. How do you say your last name, Brother Malcolm? Bowser.
Bowser.
Welcome to Black Urban America.
Thank you. Thank you. I'm honored to be here. I really appreciate this.
No, the honor is all mine. The honor is all mine. I mean, I watched your episode where I first saw your episode about 6-7 months ago. I've been watching it weekly. I never see it live because I'm at work. Yes, I'm still working for the white man. Only for a couple more months. gotta eat.
I get it.
Yeah. How is Noble and Black Dot today?
Everybody's good. Everybody's good. Noble right now is giving his mom a hard time. And Black Dot, he's chilling. He's at home.
Cool. He's supposed to. I'd like to meet Michonne Williams, who hosts her own show on Wednesday night, and she's my co-host tonight. Michonne, this is Brother Malcolm.
Hey, how you doing?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm great.
Now, let's get to, can you explain to the people that's going to download this show and to the listeners about what is Urban X-Men all about?
So, like you said earlier, we are a father and son podcast, and it really started out of the necessity to have really thought-provoking conversations, and that span generations. You know what I'm saying? I'm half his age. You know what I'm saying? So our conversations go across like different generations, where he has a different outlook on the same topic that I have, and he raised me. You know what I'm saying? So, and that was the whole premise around the title of the name. The podcast was actually called Urban X at first, and the X stands for, you know, the unknown, you know what I mean? So
right.
We wanted the unknown and, like, the urban experience. So everybody's experience in this urban terrain is unknown to everybody, you know what I mean? Nobody has the same experience. Even if, like, your siblings, like, you can go through something completely different, and that's okay. So we wanted to have a platform to kind of foster that type of conversation. And that's what we're all about. We're about education, news, fun. Like, we love to laugh. We love to tackle serious topics.
You pick on
and
your father
love...
sometimes, too. You pick on your pops sometimes, Brother Malcolm. I be watching you. I mean, when he goes out there, you give him that look from the eyes, from the side of your eyes. So, brother Malcolm, don't.
I feel like I have to, and what's so dope about our show, I feel like we balance each other out. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So if sometimes he throws his shoulder out from reaching, I have to like bring it back. Or sometimes if I'm thinking too linear about something, he can, you know, widen the scope with his perspective. Yes.
Yes. Yeah. Okay. Okay. Yeah. I tell you, I'll be on it. You know. Okay.
Thank you.
Let's get into it. Do you think that the black activists, well, has been successful for the past 50 years? If so, how? If not, why?
So the past 50, I wouldn't go back that far. I'm only 27. So
you're intelligent, and I know you know your history.
No, I do. But speaking from just personal experience of what I've seen, and my perspective has changed on this a bit. I'll tell you why. So growing up, obviously, you know, I learned about civil rights. I learned about the activists we have, and on the surface, it looks amazing, right? On the surface, it looks like we have people on the ground. We have people, you know, knocking down doors, like really hitting the pavement and fighting for our rights and things, you know, we hold dear to us. And then you get older and you start to see the same people, you know, in the same fight. And it feels like, okay, like what's changed? You get what I'm saying? And in 2021, I feel like a lot of the same things that we've done 50 years ago, they do not apply now. They're not applicable now.
Right.
So
we need new strategies.
Right. And I feel like at this point as well, things are more transparent. So now we can see what your views were 10 years ago and how you flip-flop now. You know what I mean? If you're an activist, we can see how you were vehemently against Joe Biden before, but you told us to vote for him now. You get what I'm saying? So I feel like the activists now, I feel like there's more of a spotlight on them in the sense that we can, it's easy to put them to expose themselves now, you know what I mean? And right now, I feel like activists are completely selling black people out at this point. I feel like it's really just for the notoriety and to seem like they look like they're doing something when in actuality, when we take an inventory of what's changed and where we are in this country compared to 50 years ago, yes, there are celebrities, there are people who are doing well for themselves. I'm not saying it's the same, but I will say that as far as our status in this country, nothing has really changed.
I'm going to tell you something. My brother that's no longer here was in the black. I talk about the original Black Panthers. And my mother and father was followers of Dr. King. And let me tell you something. It's a crying shame that we have the same strategy. We fight for the same issues that we did in the 50s. And I'm taken back how we listen to those who mean us no good. You know,
right.
they sell us a bunch of goods that's really not going to assist us, and we focus on the wrong issues. And I just want to say, Brother Malcolm, it's up to your generation now. I mean, the ball is about to come into your court, and y'all going to have to do the change. Y'all see where we, other generations, had fumbled, had dropped the ball, had looked away, or and we're going to get into more of that later on, but have looked away. So it's up to your generation, you know, to and talk about strategies. Do you think rallies and marches still work?
Absolutely not. I think it's at this point, again, 2021, everything is on social media. Everything is a photo op. And that's why I feel these things are, because I don't know what policy has changed as a result of any one of these panels, as any one of these rallies that we seem so fascinated with. Like, we to make any decision, we have to have three meetings before we can have a sit down, before we can have a discussion, before we can have a rally, before we can have a protest to even, you know, to even do something. And that doesn't even work. Well, I don't feel like it works. You know what I'm saying? This is just my opinion.
Yeah, I could say, in the words of Dr. Clark, Dr. John Henry Clark, all marches do is wear out a good pair of shoes. Why do you think they're having, you know, speaking of rallies, speaking of all these marches, why do you think, and we talk about history, why do you think nothing has changed? Let's say in the past 20 years, in the past 10 years, we're doing the same old thing, which is insanity. And we do the same old thing and expecting different results. Why do you think nothing
so
has
I
changed?
I think it's a few things,
hello?
Right? I think, can you hear me?
Hello? Yeah.
Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay. So I think it comes down to a few different things, because one of the reasons I feel like nothing has really changed is because of our values as a people, right? We hold celebrity to this high standard, this high stature, to the point where wherever they say, we do, and wherever they go, we move. So if that's the case, if, you know, the higher society, you know, if these people know that about us, then they can pay any celebrity they want to get us to do whatever they want. You know what I'm saying? You're seeing it right now with all the, you know, vaccinations and things like that. You're seeing it right now play out, or even when they were telling us to vote for Hillary Clinton or Joe Biden. You get what I'm saying? And I feel like once we as a collective hold ourselves to a higher standard on what we value, on who we hold, who we revere, then I think there'll be some change. But in that, what you're seeing is now the activists who are supposed to have our best interests, they're now turning into celebrities as well. And when
and
that
I
happens, they
agree,
get incorporated.
I have to agree with you guys about Black Lives Matter organization. It was a big scam. And, like, when y'all say, well, go on the website, I went on the website. Be sure I never liked
mm-hmm.
it. I went on the website, and I saw what they stood for. I said, oh, no. Oh, no.
Right.
It was like they were just, you know, for the alphabet.
Right, right.
And no else I'm surprised at. You talk about athletes. All the stuff that went on for the past 4 years, I'm surprised I don't see any of these Black Olympic athletes not saying nothing, not wearing nothing. Like in 68, everybody had on a black glove or black socks. They had some type of symbolism, but nothing. Today, it's like red, white, and blue.
Yeah, and I thought personally, because this Olympic Games was just a lot of propaganda, right? They even came out before anything was even started. They came out and said there would basically be no, protests, no political statements to be made. And I thought, like, our athletes would come with a more clever way to, you know, protest, to say something. So, and we're not seeing that. And right now, funny enough, like, Americans are getting their ass kicked in, like, almost everything right now as well in the games.
Yeah.
So,
well,
I don't know what that's
ahead
about.
We're still ahead in the overall medal count. But China's kicking
okay.
the butt in the gold, though.
Right, right.
And Sean, go ahead. You got a question for the young man.
Okay, you brought up LGBTQ. How do you feel about the LGBTQ always trying to sneak in their agenda when it comes to black activism?
So, that's a great question. So
No, it's not. You know what? His father's not a big fan of the alphabet. Where do you think I got that term from?
I'm not
even. I just wanted to interject.
So it's one first of all, I think it's the same play that's been used on us since the days of civil rights when the feminist movement first started. Every other group latches on to the black issues, the black movement, to propel what they have going on. And what happens is that a lot of these people within that community, the black people within that community, they rather be gay first than black. And that just show, and I feel like that just shows you where our collective standing is, because they rather do that, and then once they identify as gay first or trans first or bisexual first, they're willing to sell black people out and create these narratives of black men being trash and creating these narratives that black women or straight black women are weak links. It's insane. But at this point, nothing surprises me, and I don't even take it personal anymore because I just know that it's all to feed a larger narrative.
I totally agree. I also saw something recently. This was a lady, I guess it was back in the 60s or early 70s, and she was selling out black people, and white people called her on it on this video I watched. And they asked her, why would you do that to your own people? And she told them she was doing it because she was an American first. She wasn't black first. And I've come across a lot of that with people saying, I'm Christian first, I'm this first. But a lot of people don't want to be black first. I'm black first. So
and
what is your take on that?
I feel like you only notice that within our community. You know what I mean? I feel like white women stay, when they say, like, you know, stay on code, white women stay on code. You know what I'm saying? White men stay on code. No matter what they are, if they have a beef with, you know, this other community, this other people, because, like, we also have this misconception that all white people get along with each other as well. They'll argue behind the scenes. Like, their wars take place very covertly. We're the only ones that argue and fight publicly. You know what I'm saying? And I'm not talking about, you know, the Republicans and Democrats. I'm talking high-level Democrats who don't like another Democrat. I'm talking high-level Republicans, like Trump's against whatever family.
They argue publicly and then still go back and make backdoor deals, go to dinner together, families.
Exactly. They go at it on the Senate floor for the cameras and then be behind the scenes. They know each other. They're in the same golf clubs and things like that. So it's all a show, and I feel like black people always the ones that are being fooled by it, sadly.
Yeah, they are. How do we as black people push for transformation and change?
So, because, I don't feel like right now, I don't feel like it's possible for every black person to be on one accord. You know, there's way too many differing opinions about the same issue. You know what I'm saying? We could all want the same thing, but everybody has their own way of going about it. But I do think that the number one issue right now, in my opinion, is the media and the propaganda that's being spread, because I think that's infecting more people than anything else right now. You know what I mean? Everybody is tuned into the news, and we're fighting against each other because they want us to fight against each other. You know what I'm saying? These Black Lives Matter pundits or these people who, like, literally their only job is to cause division, right? They'll just get on Twitter one day and just say something foul about black men, or they'll get on, you know, a guy get on Twitter, say something foul about black women, and then, or they'll say something about straight black men and women. It's all to cause division. So I think personally, like, if, you know, whoever's listening to this, I think to get your home in order before you doing anything, and I think the first step to that is to kind of unplug and to kind of understand what your values are before engaging the world. You know what I mean? I think getting, like, some, like, I forgot who said it, but nation building starts at home first. And I think once people start to, like, really internalize that, then, you know, we could start to make some progress, because I think once everybody starts to level up individually a little bit, then I think we would be in a better position as a whole, because we're not swayed by a rapper telling us to do something or a ball player telling us to do something. We all have our own values that we hold dear.
Yeah, we just got to go back to the community. We just got to go back to the local level of the community activists and start from there instead of looking for the next savior or someone. We, you know, people got to realize everybody got to play their part. Let me ask you, sir, is there consciousness among the black activists today, or is just being, it's part being popular?
So I've always looked at, like, these celebrity activists, like Roland Martin, you know, like the Michael Eric Dysons. I've always looked at their level of consciousness as, like, very diet woke-ish. You know what I'm saying? Like, they understand what the issue is. They understand, like, okay, there is a system of white supremacy. There is these things. But they don't believe it to the point where it's really infecting everything, including their jobs, including who's paying them. You get what I mean? So they'll go, they always go to a certain line, but they never cross it when it comes to.
They won't cross. They will be totally PC. Michael Eric Dyson don't want to sacrifice his book deals. Roland don't want to sacrifice his podcast and his stuff.
Yeah, he's trying to get back on TV.
I'm on CNN or MSNBC.
Right. Right, no, I agree. I totally agree. So, and you can see it, like, they're always like, you know, for black people, they'll say something slick to a white person every now and then. And then once the issue is, like, when the issue was, like, the Stop Asian Hate thing, and then you had people, I think Mark Lamont Hill was one of the people who was saying, like, yeah, it is a problem, you know, Asian hate is a problem within the black community. Like, whoa, time out. Whose side are you on, actually, because it's not a problem in our community. You get what I mean? And I feel like there is a level of consciousness. And I also think they also know what's up, too. They also know the real deal, too, but they're not trying to hurt their pockets either.
That's right. It's funny that you mentioned Michael Eric Dyson. I've been know about Michael Eric Dyson since the early 90s, and I really never felt so, how should I say, enlightened or inspired. I mean, he's very articulate. The man's vocabulary is extensive. But I think he'd be performing. He's not real.
So I read a few of his books and, you know, watched his interviews. And again, you know, when you first find out about somebody like him who speaks very well, who seems to be up on pop culture as well, you know, it's easy to get enamored by that. But once you start to see somebody for who they really is, I mean, for who they really are, I don't know why I said that. But you start to see him for who he is, like, that's what I meant to say. But you start to see that, oh, okay, you start to see what he's about. Like, I remember, like, just watching the interview.
John Henry Clark. He's not a Dr. Clark. He's not
right,
a Dr.
like, I just started... He started just throwing random Jay-Z lines in every third sentence. I was like, okay, you're trying to use that to gain a younger audience to try to convey this message, but what you're saying isn't really helping black people at all. So that's when I really fell back from it. And then anytime you do this with anybody, once you kind of just fall back from a person, step back, and then you can kind of really see them for who they are.
Yeah, and
especially if they're a public figure, you know what I mean?
Let me, I'm going to tell you something, Brother Malcolm. I was told this many years ago, Be careful that idiot box. Be careful that idiot box. You said it, media. Who they put in front of you. Because believe
right.
me, who they put in front of you is not really totally good for you.
Right.
You know, keep one eye on them. You know, matter of fact, you listen to those that media don't want to put in front of you. That's why I used to love watch Like It Is every Sunday with Gil Noble every Sunday. I used to love watch because they want your typical, how should I say, traditional media push.
Got it.
Now, on today, Black Activists Gold, are they fighting a oppressed system or they just want to be inclusive within the system?
I think we want to be inclusive. I don't think there's any fight within any of the legacy activists that we have in our community. I think their job is to kind of keep Black people at bay, you know, say something to fire us up every now and then once things get real, once the problem becomes, like, very clear and evident who we should be fighting, then they're put in front of us to kind of quell everybody, to kind of calm everybody down.
Yeah. Go ahead, Bishawn.
Okay. I want to, how do we shake off the yoke as second-class citizens in the United States?
I think, again, that comes down to just our values as a community. Like, the only thing I feel like as a community, and I think, like I said, it starts at home, but we have to go back to the first step before we go to the larger step. So meaning, like I think one of you guys mentioned it, start back from the community itself, then the larger town, then the city. Then, like, you have to start at your community first because there's only so much you can do. There's only so many people you can reach to get on one accord. And, again, I think that is, like, one of the hardest things you can do. You know what I mean? Like, it's damn near impossible. Everybody has, like, there's people who literally agree on the same thing, but will debate each other till they're blue in the face. And it's a waste of time, and it comes down to a lot of ego, a lot of grandstanding, a lot of, and I think probably ego is the best word we have to get past. But I think once people start to level up themselves individually, and I'm not talking like all the way financially. Like, you know, financials are important mm-hmm. to have in order, but I'm talking about just, you know, education-wise, like, you know, home values, like what our young guys in the street, our young girls, and how we conduct ourselves in public, how we hold each other accountable as well. It doesn't have to be a debate all the time. It doesn't have to be YouTube beef all the time.
What are more positive Black male voices needed?
Can you say that one more time? I didn't hear the first part.
Are more positive Black male voices needed?
I think there's something about a masculine energy that people feel, I don't know if the protected is the right word, but that I might use that. I think when somebody who is of masculine energy and somebody who is about their business tells you what they feel and tells you how what they stand on and what their values and what their morals and what they stand on, I think there is something that people just naturally take to. And the fact that now, especially, we've gotten the feminine energy across all boards, and especially in the media, and I think that's done on purpose, but I think we've gotten that energy for so long in the public eye. I think it's time for, you know, just the balance.
And you know what? A real when you talk about that black masculine energy, you know, he's not going to get the exposure like a Michael Eric Tyson or a Stevie A. Smith that like the Bucks
right.
game with our enemies. And
right.
like a brother, like a young brother, 40 years old, named Nuri Muhammad, you know, no way they're going to fight him on CNN. There's no
right.
way they're going to fight him on MSNBC. There's no way. Because you talk about that black masculine energy? Nah. They really don't want his voice to be heard. I'm sorry, Michonne. Go ahead.
Okay. And I'm glad you brought that up because I don't understand why these people, these black men, real black men, want to be on those shows anyway with these emasculated males.
The numbers.
Ego. Ego.
Yeah, and the numbers.
Money.
Yeah.
Like they want notoriety more than the actual goal. They want to say, oh, I was on TV or I have a book deal. Or like that's what a lot of our people kind of fall prey to. And I think once the enemy knows how easy you are to sway, then it's really ball game. Like once they know, like, oh, we just have to offer him a contract, a book deal. We just have to offer him a TV pundit deal. Then we can tell him to basically say whatever we want to say.
That's how Al Sharpton got pulled in. That's how Al
right.
Sharpton got pulled in. You know, he got that deal with MSNBC. He changed his whole total thinking process. To me, in my view, because I know I've seen the old Al Sharpton of the 80s, and I see the new, and I know we all evolve over the years and whatnot, and we can change our way of thinking and everything, but he went all the way over.
Right, right.
Do you think it's important for black activists today to be involved in changing policy?
Definitely. I definitely do because I think policy is the only thing that will move the needle, right? We keep trying to get companies to be more diverse. We keep trying to get shows to include more black people, but I think other cultures are trying to really shape policy, and that really moves the needle. I think that helps generate more wealth in our community. That helps get people out of poverty. That helps get people more educated. That helps really change things. And again, I don't think that's possible with the activists we have today because they're only about their bottom line. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. And they only really go so far. If there was anybody last year, like when all the Black Lives Matter protests were happening, I think as black people we missed a huge opportunity to get something real out of it.
Malcolm, let me tell you something. This is going to lead me to my next question. In the late 60s, we had America on the ropes. And they were going to change and everything. But they found who they could easily sway, give them the contracts, give them the deals, have black folks listen to them instead of listen to the real ones. And, you know, it was back to business. Now,
right.
Why aren't today black activists more extremists compared to some of the brothers and sisters back in the day, like the Black Panther Party, like the Black Liberation Party, or the Black
Because
Power
they're League. Actually... Their bills are getting paid by corporations like Nike or Pepsi or Cadillac, like Tamika Mallory. That's why, because those companies pay their checks and tell them how far they can go, and tell them if they do slip up too far that they will. And I said this on my podcast a while back, and people, I don't know if people took offense to it or what, but I said, like, real activism is lonely. You know what I'm saying? Real activism is, like you need the community to kind of support you, not a brand deal or a book deal. Because once that happens, once – if I'm Nike and, Colin Kaepernick is – being revolutionary, quote-unquote revolutionary by, taking the knee or whatever, and I want him to pipe it down, I can tell him, I can make a phone call, listen, we pay you. Chill.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? He will.
$5 million from Nike. He get $5 million from Nike.
$5 million. And then what happened was, If you remember, the whole argument at first was, police killing unarmed black men, and then the
police
media
brutality.
The media flipped it to getting Colin Kaepernick his job back, and then literally that's what people were protesting for, him to get his job back instead of the original fight.
Police
and
brutality.
He didn't correct anybody
either. It got lost. It got lost.
He didn't correct anybody either. Exactly.
And let me tell you, and that's been going on for years. We come out for something, and this is another mistake that we do. I'm sorry to get off the topic. This is another, but I watched almost every movement since I was a little kid. You know what really hurt our movements? Including white folks. I'm sorry to say that.
Mm-hmm.
Once white folks get involved, it's over.
Right.
Believe me, it's over. It happened. It happened. The Black Power movement, it happened all movements. And once, and I saw last summer, well, I saw all the white folks marching with these black folks. I said, man, please. Ain't nothing going to happen. It's not going to happen. It's just, like I said before, it's a popular. It's popular.
Right.
People really don't want to sacrifice or be extreme about issues. And like you said, really being a real black revolutionary, black activist, it's lonely and it could be depressing.
Right, right. And that's not because I can already hear the comments like, well, they don't need to be broke. I'm not saying that, but I'm saying if a corporation whose values don't align with yours is actually the one feeding you, then you're not really for the people. You can never really be for the people because whatever they say is what you say.
And they can hold the strings.
You're
just a puppet. And the enemy's the proper master. Just doing it for the camera.
So I can't really speak to that. I'm not really sure, but I will say this, that I feel like a lot of our organization, quote unquote organizations, do always get caught up in some type of scandal where the money isn't going to where it was raised for and things like that, like Sean King is always brought up for his fundraising efforts and how the money never gets to where it needs to be. So I'm not really sure about the organization levels when it comes to organizations like that. But it's always weird. I'm not sure if this is a black people thing or just a human being thing. When things become, when movements become like really official organizations, a lot of people they just get greedy. You know what I mean? And that's just a human being thing. I'm not sure that's just a black thing, but I feel like back in the day, from what I researched, from what I learned, like when the Panthers were first starting out, I feel like there was more of an honor system surrounding all our movements. But even that got infiltrated. You get what I'm saying?
Yeah. Well, guess what, Malcolm? Guess what? All, not some, not half, traded.
right.
by our own people. It happened with
right.
your namesake, Malcolm X. It happened with the NOI. It happened with the Black Panthers. Civil rights movement, forget about it. You know,
right.
I say all of them was working for some type of government agency.
Right.
So
right.
all of our movements have been infiltrated. And it's a known fact. And it is documented and it's told by people that participated in those movements in that day. And I think that would never die. And go back to Michonne's question earlier that we spent a few minutes on, the black man. You got to remember, America's scared of the black man. They want you to
right.
come. They want us to come on that side of the fence. They say, hey, the grass is greener over here. Matter of fact, you can have our women, too. Come on over. Come on over. You know? And I said to that, no. I want to stay over here. This is where I belong. And a lot of our black folks want to eat the grass and screener until they get over there or they get caught up in something they ain't supposed to be doing.
Right, right.
Go ahead, Michonne.
Okay. What is the most extraordinary story that you have heard?
As far as what?
As far as black activism.
Most extraordinary story that I have heard. Wow, that's a good question.
I like to answer that, too, after you get finished, Brother Malcolm. I can tell you, I got a story. Go ahead, Brother Malcolm.
I got to think about that.
Well, the extraordinary thing I ever heard when I was about 7 years old. And they used to be black, like I said, my brother used to belong to the Black Panthers. And they used to have meetings in my house and everything. And I would sit on the floor, right, and listen to, and these were young boys. He wasn't like 35, 30 years old. He was like 17, 18 year olds right now, organizing, Vietnam vets in their army jackets, you know, getting in, trying to do something for the neighborhood. You know. And that's a life experience for me. And I think that kind of like made me start thinking pro-black, black is number one, you black and always be black, and everything you do is about black. There, Brother Malcolm, your turn.
So I would say,
that's
the last question, I'll be honest with you. Yeah, I would say that the most extraordinary story I've ever heard, I don't know, but I think the one that got me, like, whoa, was when I really learned about the Montgomery bus boycotts, and I'll tell you why. When it's taught in school, it's made it seem like it was a week or two, it was a weekend, like, all right, we all boycotted, we walked, and we had the carpool and things like that, but when you realize it was like a year and a half, almost 2 years, that they actually boycotted, actually stuck to it. I thought that was probably one of the best stories of community banding together that I had ever heard.
And you know what? Dr. King should stay on that premises, but it shows America how much economic power that the black man has. But, you know,
right.
Dr. King wanted to go into segregation, to be inclusive. He had, I mean, again, we had the ball. I think he fumbled it when he wanted to say, oh, we want to be inclusive and everything. And but he saw that, wow, we got a lot of economic power. Forget them.
Right.
You know, we could have our own buses, bus line. We could have our own taxis. Yeah, forget them. You know, and I think
he
might have fumbled that ball a little bit on that one. Yeah, black folks, I mean, they walk miles to work and everything. Yeah, yeah.
I'm glad you mentioned that because about a week ago, I was you know, changing channels, just going through, like, something that I don't normally look at. And I just happened to hear this white man who's a conservative, and I stopped because I do look and listen sometimes to see what they're up to.
Hey,
and
you got to listen to your enemy.
They were missing Black unity. And they said that their biggest threat that they were talking about was Black unity, but not in the sense of just Black people getting together. They were talking far as that they could, Black people could cripple them economically, and United States would fall. That's what they were discussing a week ago.
Yeah. Yeah. And how come the gay activists, you know, for learning all this history that we have, all the wrong moves that we made, Brother Malcolm?
Right.
How come we continue to do the same thing, looking for different results, instead of looking to something else to focus on, like economic? Because with Stokely Carmichael, Brother Teray, God rest his soul, when he was the first one to say Black power, and what he meant by Black power was Black economic power. How come folks don't want to exercise that? Especially today. And y'all know that we have Black economic power. But why don't we want to go down that path?
I think it starts at home. A lot of people, our parents, our grandparents, they really didn't have financial literacy. So they passed out bad habits. And then in school, they don't really teach you about financial literacy. So you're kind of learning on the fly, and then what happens is you're learning from what you see on television, and we see, like, you know, gaudy spending that we don't, and a lot of people, and a lot of households too, Black households particularly, a lot of people are scared to talk about money with their family, or they just feel uncomfortable. They feel it's, like, not really appropriate when it is. So I think it kind of starts there, like, and I also feel like I think there is this notion, this misconception within the Black community that there's only so much money to go around. So that's where I feel like you get a lot of the backstabbing, the scamming, and things like that goes on within our communities, because, like, we have a real scarcity mindset when it comes to money. So I think once people, and I think, you know, and I think my generation is kind of, you know, bucking those trends a little bit when it comes to money and financial literacy. A lot of people, I know a lot of my friends are investing, and my parents didn't invest. You know what I'm saying? Like, they learned that.
We weren't told to do that, Brother Malcolm. We weren't told to do that. You know what we was told? You know, get a job.
Right, right.
You know, if you go to school, make sure you come back to the community and help the community. But when we came back, everybody, at that time, everybody was moving out, but a lot of our communities was in the drug war, you know? So, but that's what we was told. Go get a job, raise your family. We wasn't told to, like my kids are adults now. I told them when they was real young, I said, look, don't make the mistake that I made, you know? Get a skill and start your own business.
Yeah, I definitely had a 9-to-5 desk job with the city, you know, a few years ago, and so before I, you know, quit and made the full leap into entrepreneurship. So I know.
And you know what it is too, Brother Malcolm? It's not like Michonne, but Michonne had an old business for years. But I'm just saying, like, in the beginning, you might be a little intimidated. Like, wow.
Right.
Are they going to buy this product or service from me? Will I be able to get that contract? Am I smart enough or whatever? Hey, you know, and we have many conversations on the show about it go back to the educational system, where they're not teaching our kids entrepreneurship. They're not teaching our kids to STEM. They're not teaching teaching our kids Afrocentric thought. They're not.
Right, definitely. Yeah, yeah. That's unfortunate. Super unfortunate.
And this is part of history, too. How come, what's your perception on, how come black folks got to wait for a tragic incident in order to mobilize and become active in our communities? And then when media died down, we died down, too, instead of continue to fight for whatever we're focusing on, whether it be whatever, educational reform, whatever.
That kind of goes back to what I said before about the media telling us what to be mad at, telling us what to pay attention to, because there are tragic events that happen all across the country every day. But we only hear about specific ones that have political undertones to them because these news corporations, these news stations, they make their money off of our trauma and our being scared and our, hardship. So that's what I really think it is. I think if we just kind of stay in tune with our community, a lot more would get done because I think it'll be more authentic. Because it's always like anytime, a black person gets killed by the cops, for a good 2 weeks, maybe 3 weeks, it say his name or say her name or Black Lives Matter and things like that and, don't shoot, hands up, don't shoot, things like that, and it's over. As soon as it's not cool to talk about anymore, as soon as it's lost esteem, it's over.
I'm going to put you on the spot, Brother Malcolm. It's going to be my last question for the night. And your personal feelings, should black folks be thinking about separation, or should black folks continue to fight for inclusion?
Oh, I think inclusion is probably one of the worst things that's happened to the black community. My girlfriend, she lived in a Hasidic Jewish community in Brooklyn, and as much they do against the black community, you have to admire how tight they are. You know what I'm saying? Like,
Saturdays. Because the Hasidic Jews got the whole entire Eastern Parkway, and they got that thing, Myrtle Avenue over there. Yeah, they got their own schools, bus companies, and everything. Especially the Hasidic Jews.
They own ambulances, all of that. And on Saturdays, entire business, like the entire community is closed because that's their day and no businesses violate that. And I think if black people had our own tight-knit community like that, where kind of everybody knows everybody, we know the store owners, the money stays within our community way longer than a couple hours, then we would be in a way, way better place than we are now.
Yeah, so true, so right. Well, Brother Malcolm, I've been trying to get this brother on the show like for 3 months and everything.
Yeah.
He's just a busy young man. That's why I kept on emailing you. When you said it sounds good, that last email, I got him now. So, Brother Malcolm, I want to thank you for coming on the show. Very honored for coming
Thanks
on
for
the
having
show
me.
And everything. And did very well about the information, because we're only on 1 hour show. I'm not long-winded like you and your father. They stay on for 2-3 hours, Sean. But I want everybody to check out. I'm serious. They go all night long. I said, man, I got a bad shoot. When I catch the episode, I got to pause it. I said, I'll come back to it in a couple of hours, And once they have that real, everything is black, even their commercials, everyone is black. They practice the theory of black collectiveness and black economics. It's a collective effort and a community effort. And, you know, like, I want everybody to go on the YouTube channel. When you hear this show, go on the YouTube channel and go to Urban Excellence. It's Black Dot and Malcolm. Brother.
Thank you so much for having me. Really.
I'm definitely checking them out.
I thought you would already. Michelle, what's happening tomorrow night?
I'm going to be speaking on some current events and some other things that I found out about.
Okay. Well, okay. All right, folks, thank you for tuning in tonight. As always, I am because we are. We are because I am. Good night, and I'll see you next Tuesday.
Not be able to stay home, brother. You will not be able to plug in, turn on, and cop out. You will not be able to lose yourself on Skag and skip out for beer during commercials because the revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not be brought to you by Xerox in four parts without commercial interruption. The revolution will not show you pictures of Nixon blowing a bugle.